Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Woj Pod. Get the inside scoop on the biggest NBA news and hear from the stars on and off the court on the Woj Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, hockey has returned to ESPN. The NHL has started back up, and that means you can stream your team's games on ESPN Plus, from the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning to the brand new Seattle Kraken. Subscribe to ESPN Plus so you don't miss a goal. Also, be sure to follow In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with Linda Cohn and Emily Kaplan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Oh, it's happy to be here. I love Fridays. It's the best day of the week. This week's been long, brother.
Hey, dude, we are living similar lives, dog. How was Thanksgiving at Shea Foxworth?
Oh, it was good, man. It's the first time we kind of hosted again since the pandemic, which was nice. We didn't have a big group, just like 15 or so people. I made some turkey, some brisket. Well, my wife's from D.C. We live in D.C. Her whole family lives in the limits. So, like, before COVID, we had 40 people or so here, and it'd just be like 4 people from my side of the family. And then it's just all her family up in here. But this year, it was still the same 4 people from my side and just fewer people from her side. So it was a small Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm always like the big family setup like that, especially when it's like in-laws, is always kind of interesting to me. So my father is one of 10, but they're all over the place, right? Like, you know, like that was, it was one of them situations where my daddy from one of them towns where the only ticket out of that bad boy was Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, once people do that, where they end up, you know, it could be anywhere. So they're all over the place. So it's not like there was a central location for everybody to go to. 10 people with 10 families, you know, they own, you know, set up or whatever. And my mother is one of 2. And they all lived in Oklahoma. Like her sister, her parents, her sister's kids, they all lived in Oklahoma City, 8 hours away. You know what I mean? So, like, we never had like the big giant family thing when it goes down. And when I hear about people having like all them folks over, I'm just like, wow, cannot relate. And I'm just glad. And I'm just glad for you that you like them. Cause I see them people like for me, the people who are always such and such's birthday, it's my uncle's whatever, it's grandma's this, it's grandma's that, like 12 out of the 52 weekends out the year, you going to sign up for that? Cannot relate. I don't know how y'all do that, especially, not talking about your people, but especially since I know most of y'all don't even really like each other like that. Y'all just be doing it.
They seem to really like each other. It was a hard adjustment, I think, for me, but I think I like established my personality early on. So like it was just me, my brother, and my parents, and like my grandmother lived close to us, and then my aunt moved close to us, and so it just wasn't very big. So that was a kind of a shock when it was like every other week there was somebody in her family doing something that we were supposed to go to. Except I mean, I'm a good dude. Everybody knows I'm a good dude, but I'm not coming to everything, and everybody knows and respects that. Like, I treat their daughter well. I treat them well when I'm there, but I can't be at everything, and it's fine. It works out well because I like to be alone, and so sometimes Ashley and the kids got to go celebrate something that is happening in the family, and I'm going to just go ahead and chill back here. This a little me time, and it's all right.
Yeah, I don't see how them people be maintaining perfect attendance. That's the thing that gets me, is that it's not so much that these folks be having all these different events, right? And again, I'm not shading the people for having all the events and stuff. I'm just saying my experience is totally different, right? But what, it's not just that they got all the events, is that the events are always priority over whatever else. And at least it sounds like all y'all's people is around the same place. A whole lot of folks be getting on the train and getting on the plane to go to every single one. And I just don't know how you do. Maybe I'm just too selfish. I got too much of my own stuff I'd be over here doing.
I think you're right. Yeah, we don't have the plane situation, but I've come around to appreciate the benefits of big family because, like, I'm not blood related to them. And also, they're all, like, pretty successful and have their own thing going on. I know when we have family reunions on my side, either my mom or my dad, like, don't everybody got their stuff together? So it is always No. I don't have a problem with it, except for when you the one with their stuff together. Then it becomes it becomes not only a family event, but it becomes a labyrinth that you got to avoid. You got to show people love and respect and have a good time while also not getting hit up, or also like avoiding whatever guilt you might feel. Like it's a different experience when you see somebody once every 3 years and now all of a sudden they done lost 30 pounds, they don't got a job, and not lost 30 pounds in a good way. They done lost 30 pounds in a bad way. Their daddy had to go to college for a couple of years, and you like, man, I guess I got to do something about this.
Yeah, see, I said that's one thing I got to say. Like, the Joneses, it's 10, so you got about a normal distribution. Right. You know what I mean? On like who turns up. You got some high achievers, got some people ain't making. It ain't a setup, though. You ain't never got to worry about like the hit you up type of thing. Right. Like, everybody's good in the same space and kicking it around. Like, the only time I ever remember any like sort of family drama was that time that one of my uncles stole $35 from my brother on Christmas morning, and my brother quickly surmised where that $35 ended up. And yes, it was used to barter for a geological specimen, shall we say.
Got it.
And next thing I know, or was it 30 bucks? I can't remember. Because my brother was trying to figure out like what he did with the money, not figure out like generally what he did with the money specifically. Oh, it must have been $40, because I think he was like, "What'd you get? Two 20s, or did you get 50 for 40? Because it was Christmas, right?
Yes, a holiday sale."
That was the only time that I remember it got a little bit dicey on one of these holidays with the Joneses all coming together.
Yeah, that sounds good. My family is a little bit more confrontational. It was always my grandmother just died last week, and so we had memories of her. Like during Thanksgiving, we talked about like times where we spent together, and all of them was when she cussed somebody out, and we all were looking back lovingly. Like, remember when she hit you with a refrigerator door? Yeah. Remember she used to have a coffee mug all the time, but it only had Hennessy in it. that was the reminiscing from my side. It's a little different when people die on my wife's side. It's like, it's all positive memories. How many graduations they went to.
We all by and large chilling over here on this end, but you got to, you prepare the meat at Thanksgiving at your house. Cause you got, we were talking about this before we got on. One thing they don't tell you about when you make your come up or whatever is you mess around and have not just the nicest house, but the biggest house, especially if y'all need to roll 40 deep. Guess whose house Thanksgiving gonna be at every year?
Yep, we do have it. The fact of the matter is, I think my wife wanted, like, we started hosting it because she wanted it. Like, it was her mom's house is fine. It's enough to host people, but she wanted to take over. And so we took over. And then that's when it was like, she was like, well, I ain't making a turkey, so you better figure out how to make a turkey. And then her uncle started giving me some brisket, and he's like, you better figure out how to make this brisket. And it's a little intimidating, I guess, but you gotta love the internet, man. I just Google around. If you can follow instructions, you can cook. I'm not saying you can be a chef. Maybe that's something different. But as long as you can follow instructions, you can cook. And I can do that. So people love the food that I make, and I don't play it up like I'm some great chef. Like, nah, I just... Here's the recipe. I Googled it. I did what it said. And then look, beautiful brown turkey that is kind of juicy.
Hey, man, maybe I'm a different kind of dude or whatever. You also get left with the option of, you know, just simply pointing out, I mean, you can go somewhere else.
That's true, but it's easier, you know? Man. You got to get these easy buckets when you can, man. Like, it's real hard to score in the fourth quarter. So you give me the rock in the first quarter. Like, this is a first quarter bucket. That's easy. Just spend a couple hours marinating the turkey, couple hours, put it in the oven. You don't even got to touch it. You put it in the oven nice and low and come back and check it out, and you're good. Throw that thing, I bag roasted this year because I wanted to make it a little juicier. So I put it in the bag, put it in the oven. And now everybody who comes to Thanksgiving, because turkey, it seems big and it seems like a big deal, it's the centerpiece. Everybody, I done scored points with everybody on every side, top to bottom, and it didn't take that much effort.
Yo, you got a vaccine requirement for the holiday at your crib?
Hell yeah. Like, I mean, It's easy because maybe this is the wrong reason why, but when the vaccine first came out, the people that were getting the vaccine and promoting the vaccine were people that I wanted to be aligned with. And that's the same thing as the people in on my wife's side of the family. A couple people on my side have recently gotten the vaccine because their job required it and they was mad about it. But I got the vaccine. We all got the vaccine. I got my third one, feeling great. Crossed over, went from Pfizer to Moderna, double covered. So I'm feeling healthy.
I went ahead and got the booster. If you see the fools on Twitter, they'll be like, yo, how many booster shots are you willing to get? I'll get one once a week. What is so hard about this? I will make the 10-minute walk to the health facility in my neighborhood once a goddamn week, if that's what it takes. Here's what I'm saying. If you told me, because I went and got that boost, right? If you told me that you lose one drop of whatever they put in me every week and I got to go back and get a drop, I will go back and get a drop every second. I don't understand how they like, oh, no, I'm going back for one more. That's just going over the line now.
Yeah, I mean, once you broke the seal, like, if you believe that it was something dangerous before, once you've already gotten it, I'm with you. Yeah, if we get to that point, I would like one of these companies to come out with something that I could do at home, because I'll go ahead and do it at home myself. But I'm not going to be like, nah, I'm not getting it. Yeah, let's give me an at-home pack. Don't people give themselves insulin all the time? Like, it's fine. Like, I have to give my wife shots for her Crohn's disease, like, once every 2 weeks. We can handle this. Just go put in one of those little things. You press the button on top, shoots it in. Good to go.
Yep. Even if I had to be out here getting down like Keith Richards, tie a belt around my arm, do what you got to do. I don't even think I need to do that. I'm veiny. I just got, I'll just ball my fist a few times and make that thing jump up. All right, so we got the so-called Africa variant in the streets now. They're not calling it that, but they calling it that. A significant part of how we've decided to quote unquote move forward from COVID involves a very important strategy, which is you take both hands and then you point up your index fingers, and then you take your right index finger and you put it in your right ear, and then you take your left one and you put it in your left ear, and then you go like this. La la la, I can't hear you. La 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 la. Like when the president was talking about whatever our path forward is, it's not going to involve lockdowns. How can you say that right now?
I don't know.
Like how in the world am I supposed to, like, no. I would like that option to still be on the table. Not that I want to be locked down, but it just might be what we got to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, safety first. There are lots of things I can think about in my life that I would not like to do, but I do them because I want to be safe. And there are lots of things that are made less fun when you add in certain protections. That's fine.
Yes.
I'm okay with those protections because I do not want the potential byproduct of not having those protections. So don't come at me with your fingers in your ears, la-la-laing my safety. Like, no. If we have to have a lockdown, then I'm going to have a lockdown because I do not want to have whatever diseases that come from, some of them are curable, some of them are not. I do not want to have an 18-year commitment to, we talking about something else, my bad.
Oh, yeah, I mean, shit, there's some commitments you can give for even longer.
You're darn right, and I don't need that. So,
no,
I understand life is going to be a little less fun if we have to lock it down again, but Lord, I'm willing.
You're like, I want a memory, not a souvenir. And that is where we are all of this. And it's just, I hadn't thought about talking about this, but we here now. You notice everybody all of a sudden taking this serious again now since they thought something came from Africa.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I feel like somebody sat up and was like, okay, I don't know if you guys heard, but Omicron is out here and we're a little worried about Omicron. So here's what we gonna do. We gonna tell people it came from Africa. Okay? And that's gonna get everybody back in line. And guess what? That's basically what happened.
Yep.
Told him that Africa was in the house, and boom, everybody took it serious. And you know what's so wild about it? They out here like, yo, we gonna find all, like, I saw a headline from a paper in Bangkok that was like, said something, government hunts African visitors, right? Like, because they're trying to find all, the whole Africa. Not and this was in South Africa where they found Omicron. The whole Africa. But what gets me about the South Africa part is, who do you think is catching these flights out of South Africa to go to Europe and to go to the United States?
Yeah.
I am guessing it is overwhelmingly white people.
Yep.
Like, something tells me that if you go to the airport in South Africa, it's white people on the planes and black people doing all the work.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you're right. But yeah, they said Africa City, and everybody get a little everybody get a little nervous. Like, you're right. And it's, they don't even say South Africa. They'll be like Southern Africa to make sure they take into account all the countries down there. Because South Africa, I think the white population down there might make people think something different. But make sure you know, we're not talking about South Africa. We talk about Africa City. It is all of Africa City might be coming to get you with the Africa cooties. One of the articles I read on that was talking about, which I didn't realize, that there are thousands of mutations of coronavirus. But some of them are, which I mean, I guess I, it's not that I didn't realize it, just I hadn't thought about it. Like, it makes sense, because that's generally how, like, evolution works. There's a bunch of different mutations. Only some of them are, like, able to survive, but this is the most recent one that is actually more dangerous. And that's the scary part, I think. I don't know. I understand the point you're making, but I frankly don't care where it came from. I don't know what, like.
No, I'm saying, I don't care.
No, I know.
You don't care. But while we here, if this were the Australian strain, I don't think people really out here tripping like that. I don't even think they tripping that hard if it's the Colombian strain.
You're absolutely
I really don't. I think, but the African strain came around and it was all hands on deck. And the South African doctors are like, nah, we checking it out. It don't seem so bad. But it's from Africa.
And they were like incredibly responsible, which is more than you could say about a lot of the other countries where new strains popped up. Like, they were honest and forthright, and like, they're going to need some help and we need to give them the help because that's going to help us all. But I do wonder, I mentioned this a long time ago about the vaccine hesitance to my wife. Is like, I wonder if we had to pay for vaccines for the first couple weeks, if the reaction would be different. Because if, like, the first week of vaccines, they were like, these vaccines $2,000. And then the government stepped in and was like, never mind, we're going to pay for it. How different would it be? Because there's something to be said for, like, the psychological impact of someone giving you something for free. I never, ever in my life trust anything that's free. And I know the vaccines aren't free, but they're, I mean, ostensibly for the people who are getting them, nobody coming out their pocket. It's just a whole different psychological experience when you wake up and like, hey, this thing costs $2,000. And you and your family like, how are we going to get this money for a couple of days? Then all of a sudden now we got it on sale. The Black Friday trick. They mark it up so they can mark it down. I feel like we wouldn't have any vaccine deniers if we just for the first 2 days charged a couple rich people for it. And then everybody else, you can get it for free.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. I'd paid 2G.
I would have been in the first, first line. I would have paid it for sure. I got my kids vaccinated this week. Oh, phenomenal.
Especially by the time it became available, we had been living the life that we had been living for how long by then? 2Gs? Like, look, man, look at all the dumb shit you spent 2Gs on in the course of quarantine. You know what I'm saying? Like, every people are like, oh, I don't know if I'd be able to get 2Gs. Anyway, let me jump on my Peloton. Nah, man. I'd have come up on that 2G so hard, so fast, so quick.
Yep. You could have got a real bike and went outside and pedaled around after that.
Yes, yes. Nah. But I mean, dog, why is it, how is it still like this?
I don't know, man.
Like, it's still like, I got more things than I'm willing to do now. I've gone to see my parents a few times in the last couple of months and that sort of thing. But it's still like, I think about like in the city here, it still ain't that much I'm really trying to do.
Yeah.
I ain't got no whole lot of restaurants I'm trying to sit inside of, because that's the thing. Winters come and people, and this was always my concern, was that once people got out a little, they weren't going to go back in. And I think that's where we about to be in this, is where people are not. It's crazy. People won't take their asses outside when it's snowing because it's dangerous. But they going to be out here with this. This the snow you can't see, baby. This black ice. This the air is full of black ice. You never know when you might slip and fall.
Yeah, but there's also a chance that we never get it under control, or we never get back to normal. Like, that's a distinct possibility, yeah. Which is like, at some point, even you are going to have to learn to return to, we keep talking about it like it's going to be over. You think about all the coordination that we need. It started in like one tiny area in China. Like, it only needs one area in the entire world to continue to thrive and mutate, and some time to mutate to something dangerous enough to spread back across the country. Like, I hate to be a downer on this, but like, that seems more likely than the entire world getting on the same page and locking this thing all the way down the way that it needs to be. It's like,
yeah,
maybe we'll get to a better place, but I have a hard time viewing a world where we're like, remember that coronavirus?
Like, nah, I think you're
remember
right.
Remember that?
Yeah, I think you're right in that regard. And I have to realize, and this is just kind of a general thing with me about recognizing how my life is different than the lives of most people I'm talking to and that I'm talking about. And a significant part of my life is that I am somewhere between recognizable and reluctantly famous, which is to say, it's been a long time since I felt like being out here with y'all like that in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, my lifestyle over the years has become more insular and been more toward a move inside, stick with the people that I know and that I'm cool with and all of that stuff life already. So honestly, when this stuff locked down, I mean, obviously the first set of things like changed things, right? But now, like, a whole lot of things that people are like, yo, I'm gonna go back to doing this, man, I had stopped doing a bunch of that stuff a while ago, you know? So it's like much easier for me. But like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm looking at like, am I at an outdoor concert point yet in my journey? Indoor concert, not unless we all masked up. Like, I'll go do a Broadway show because they got a mask requirement. I'm willing to do that. Am I at the point where I'm willing to go with 17,000 people screaming at the top of their lungs? No, not there. Yeah. Not there.
My daughter just turned 11 on the 2nd. So she really has fallen in love with the music from this musical called Six. So they're all fully vaxxed up. And I really was planning on taking the whole family to New York and taking her to see that at some point during like the Christmas break. But man, I'm having second thoughts. Because one thing about me getting it is one thing. I don't want it. I'm doing everything to not get it. I haven't gotten it so far, but there's something about that that feels like, all right, well, I'll do what I got to do to deal with it. But my kids, man, like, and if I do something that we could have avoided, like take a vacation, and my kids get the Rona, like, I'm gonna feel like a real scumbag. But also, I think to the point that you were making about how your life has changed is like, the fame part is one thing. And I understand the point that you're making there. But another thing that I think is different, and some people in the audience can relate to this, and I think some people probably will understand where I'm coming from, is your day-to-day life, like, it matters to how comfortable you are with this lockdown. So, like, you have a job that you like and enjoy. You have ways to contact people. You live in a place that is comfortable and nice. And not just you. Plenty of people that listen to this understand that. And that makes us look at other people who seem to not be able to stay in their houses and be judgmental towards them, which they probably deserve. But also, can you imagine living in a place that you hate, doing a job that you hate, that also requires you to go out and be around people to do stuff that you hate? And then on the weekend, like, this is what you hear people talk about, how they live for the weekend. These people are like, literally, like, this is their only time to do something that make them happy. And it's not like they aren't around people. And like, I'm trying to be empathetic. If I put myself in that situation where 5 days a week I'm miserable, and then I go to sleep in a little house that I don't like, or a little apartment that I don't like. Now it's Saturday and these rich white people was like, you can't go out. You can't do nothing. Like, no. Y'all said I couldn't go. Yeah. Y'all let me go to the Amazon factory and pack up this stuff, didn't you? So I'm going to the club. If I get the Rona, I get the Rona.
Well, that's what I realized about, like, with New York. This is a big one. So one thing about New York, like, I remember when I was in college, we just couldn't understand why these New York dudes is just always outside.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, it was one, why you got a bubble coat on in the last week of September? But it's just like, why are y'all always outside? Why are y'all always sitting on a step? And I just didn't realize how much of that be outside culture in New York is about how many people are inside. So, like, I am one of the few people in New York. I got a 3-bedroom apartment, and I'm one person in it. Most people in a 1-bedroom apartment, and it's more than 3 people up in that spot, right? And, like, there's more people here, people you would never expect who grew up under those circumstances. Mm-hmm. Like, I got a friend who grew up in New York. You'd never believe it if you knew him, but grew up in a 1-bedroom apartment with him, his parents, and 2 siblings. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what it is. So, hell yeah, them people going to be sitting outside. Like, they ain't necessarily going to be at the club or whatever it was, but it's just like, I just don't get why y'all are outside, because we just can't all be in here all the time. Yeah. It's not an option. You know what I mean? Like, there's realistic things on this. Now, there's certain activities, and I see the way people go about it, where I'm like, yo, y'all ain't got to kick it like this. You know, like, this ain't like, wow, you're really at the hookah bar. Okay. You know, hookah. Sorry. I have to, I always say hookah when it's hookah, and it hadn't dawned on me that hookah sound like I'm saying something else. Yeah. But, you know, we don't have to be judgmental about it, right? But I do also think that there is a measure of sacrifice that people are, like, ultimately going to make when they're like, nah, I'm outside and I ain't going back in. Nah, we might just have to come back in, man.
Yeah.
Like, but also, we use the term mental health a little bit too broadly, but I've come to understand some people just really ain't, like, sitting still is much harder for them. I used to date a woman who told me something, and I never, like, it didn't make any sense to me. She would always, if she had an indirect flight, she would always schedule the connection with as short a time as she could in between the flights, which, if you are any kind of veteran traveler, you know, is a horrible idea.
Right.
She can't just sit still at the gate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She could not handle, if the only way to do it was 2 hours in between flights, she can't take sitting there in the airport for an hour and a half waiting to board, you know? And I think there's people like that too that just can't sit still.
We're all made differently, you know? And, like, you hear the difference between introverts and extroverts, like, thrown around a lot. And I think I would qualify myself as an introvert, meaning that, like, I get recharged from being alone, whereas extroverts get recharged from, like, being around people. And for them, like, it has to be hard. And I can't put myself in those shoes, but I'm with you. Like, I don't want them to feel any measure of shame, but the sacrifice for those people, it's much more difficult than the sacrifice for me. And people like you are completely comfortable sitting in here. Yeah, just me and some electronic devices, and we good to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't do a lot of lonely. Like, it can happen a little bit every now and then, but that's not an emotion that I typically experience. I don't know why. I know y'all here. You know what I'm saying? You know, and I grew up kind of as an only child. Now, really, my siblings are much older than me. And, like, my dad did a lot of stuff growing up, like, working in other places. You know, my brother and sister, they come in, they go to college, they leave. Like, I'm accustomed to people being gone. You know what I mean? I'm accustomed to people making moves. And sometimes when people do that and they make their moves, you're going to be chilling for the dolo. That's just what it is. I am built for that. I get it. Some of y'all are.
I can't imagine if it was the opposite way around, though. Like, if we had to be around people all the time, like, that would drive me absolutely mad.
Nah, here's the thing about it. If we had to be around each other all the time, don't you worry. It won't be that many people around for long.
Yeah, it's true. It's a recipe homicides.
Yes, exactly. I was about to say, the forget about the coronavirus. Yeah. It would be the Hamasid virus. Like, it would be just like, they're like, yo, like, the way they had them tents set up, and they're like, yo, the hospitals, they have to keep all the dead bodies in coolers. That is where we would be. If we all had to be around each other, that, you know, like, oh, man, that would be a wrap.
Oh, God.
That would be a wrap. Switch gears just a little bit here. While we got about 10 minutes left in this year party. Interesting week in college football, Dominique.
It is.
So much of this was hilarious. Like, I mean, you know, hilarious is the right way, but it's just a sign of the change of world order. Like, the coach at Oklahoma doesn't leave to go to another college. Lincoln Riley was like, nah, I think I'm about to do that. And he went ahead and he made the USC move, and I contend maybe ahead of the cavalry. Not that they were going to fire Lincoln Riley, like, next year, but some discontent had been growing in Norman for a while. Of course, they've completely forgotten that because they mad and they got their feelings hurt. That old buddy dipped out. So he dipped out. People thought he was going to LSU. Brian Kelly take himself down there to LSU horrible personality match, all of this stuff. But he is going to be there. I saw something. Did you see the quote where he was like, we're not here to change Louisiana. We're here for Louisiana to change us. And I know what he meant. But you know what I heard when he said that? Oh, yeah, we're ready to cheat. like that. That's what I heard. Look, my dad is from Louisiana. I'm pretty familiar with the state and its get down and everything else. And one thing that is decidedly characteristic about Louisiana, not that this is the only place I can say this about, but I can say it more uniquely about Louisiana, it's a place where morality is fluid. I think fluid is probably the best way to describe how it goes, right? Like Notre Dame ain't really, they ain't really so much about that cheating game up there at Notre Dame. He ain't never had a cheating job before. The SEC, there's a good chance you might have a cheating job. And if you go 5-7 and they're like, why are you going 5-7? And your answer is, because we're not cheating, people going to say, well, maybe you need to start. Maybe you should consider getting in on some of this cheating. So, like, yeah, he said, we about to become like, we really, like, true Louisianans. I was like, oh, okay. Bags will be dropping.
Man, that's a perfect way for him to say it, too, because Louisiana is such a unique place that some people could interpret it like, oh, this man want to learn about gumbo. Yeah, he want to join parades. Like, that's what he want to do. He want to learn a little French. That's what he talking to do. Want to go on airboat rides. No. He want to drop bags on the kitchen tables of young athletes is what he talking about.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes, he will leave without ever tasting fried alligator. Sorry, guys. He will know nothing of andouille sausage. But Louisiana, he will know what your get down is. But I thought about it. You see the thing where people, they were like, oh, he went and talked to the team. He only talked to them for 4 minutes and left. What was there to talk about?
Nothing.
What was there to say?
Nothing. I mean, there was nothing to say, but it's still, I mean, as a college athlete, former college athlete, like, I know somewhat what this feeling is like. So my freshman year, we go in, we win the ACC championship. We go get blown out in the Orange Bowl by Florida, something that I try to forget, but you like to remind me of. But that happened. And it was my first year there. It was the coach's first year, Coach Friedman's first year there. I played a bunch as a freshman, had a good season. After the season was over, Coach Friedman was going on this tour of interviews so he could get more money. He went down to Tampa Bay to interview for the Bucks job. And then he got a big 10-year, $10 million, or no, it was like a couple years, like $10 million. I remember the number, $10 million extension, which is pennies in today's thing. But the point was, I saw that. I remember coming back, and then all the coaches had a Cadillac deal. So then I come back to school after we got smashed by Florida, and I got I'm proud of my bowl, my Orange Bowl sweatshirt is what I got. And then on the news, Coach Friedman is in Tampa Bay, and the whole lot is full of these brand new shiny Cadillacs, and I got my Orange Bowl sweatshirt. And that was it. That was the moment. Then a couple days later, I remember one of the safeties, Denard Wilson, in the middle of winter workouts, came up and stopped the whole workout and went over to the coach and was like, are you in or are you out? Because he kept doing these interviews. And so then he was like, I'm in. And then he got this big contract. And like the team, I remember the team responding like we won. Like, yeah, he's in. He's still here. And I remember being in the back of the room, my little young ass in the back of the room, like, but he got $10 million and we got sweatshirts. We got sweatshirts. I think we got portable DVD players too. Something like that. And like these cheap ass watches that say Orange Bowl on them that couldn't have cost more than $20. But anyway, I just remember that being like, all right, this is big business. And that was for me when it started. But the evolution of college football to like, it's always been big business, but to the business that it is now, like, I feel like we're in the process of like a crazy evolution to where the SEC is going to fully become like a semi-pro, or not even semi-pro, like a pro league at some point. They're going to get all the best coaches, all the best players, and that's what's going to happen. And this whole process, while this is happening, it's life. The coaches jump ship. I'm not mad at the coaches. I get upset when we don't acknowledge that this system is still broken and flawed and the players are paying the cost. Like, I understand transfer portal is open, but it's still not fair because they ain't paying them. They not getting paid. And NIL, whatever. The people who are making money off of these players, these coaches, in these universities are not paying the players, and that's the part that makes like that makes me uncomfortable. Like, I'm not mad if a free agent player in the NFL goes somewhere else or if a coach jumps ship in the NFL. These fools are leaving while their team, at least for Brian Kelly, his team is still in the hunt. He like, nah, I'm up out of here. It feels gross to me. So good for him. Get that money. But I'm not going to let it go by without us pointing out that it is gross.
Now, to be fair to the coaches, I hate to be that guy. I do. The timeline and calendar of a college football season does not allow for decency. It just doesn't. Like, when you stop and think about how crazy it is that Saturday night, Lincoln Riley is coaching Oklahoma. Sunday, he's on a plane to Los Angeles. He already moved,
yeah.
Right? With a plane full of dudes. Like, if you're going to jump on this job, you have to do it right now. This is the only option in making the move. And so the other side of it winds up being basically that a coach can never wind up going and getting a better job or a different job or whatever it is, which also doesn't seem to be terribly fair. Now, where this also becomes a problem, and you know this, is these cats always stay talking about it's a family and all this stuff. And I'm like, why don't you just get rid of that rhetoric? And I feel like a lot of this other stuff goes. Because look, I don't know these kids at Notre Dame, okay? I don't know their relationships, any of that. I do know this. I would bet 100% of the players on that roster would rather Marcus Freeman be the head coach of that team than Brian Kelly be the head coach of that team. It's hard for me to believe that any of them are actually sad that Brian Kelly is leaving. They might be sad at the way that it ultimately went, but I bet they ain't sad he gone. So, like, all you can say is, hey, man, I made this move. This is what was best for me. Any questions? Okay, I guess I should probably leave. If they liked him or loved him, maybe it turns into a 30-minute discussion. I think that coaches need to start treating them players like adults,
right,
in the sense that I do feel like you should start off by saying, hey, man, forget about like when the hiring process or whatever happens. Every time you talk to any player, it's like, guys, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, if I'm Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, there ain't a lot of jobs better than this one I have. I love this job. I really can't see a way that I would leave this job to go somewhere else, because like this LSU thing wasn't plausible before 4 days ago, right? It's like, this is the place where I am, and this is the place where I want to be. But I'll be honest with you, if there's a better place for me to be, then I'm probably going to look into it. And you as a player, if you look around and you think that there's a better place for you to be, you will look around and I will support you,
right,
when you do that, right? But that's not what they tell them. They tell them it's a family. They tell them we all in this together. There ain't no quitting, so forth and so on and everything else. But I honestly think that these kids, especially since they are going to transfer as soon as it looks like they ain't going to get no run, they would understand where you come from. They've been transferring since they was in eighth grade.
I mean, I'm with you, but I would say like the same thing applies to what you said about it's hard to get a new job and the schedule makes it hard to do that in a decent way. Like, I would say to that, yeah, it makes it hard. So a lot of stuff is hard in life, but you can say the same thing. If you're going to do that, then you have to deal with the criticism that comes along with it. And that's fine.
Yes.
So that's fine. I'm not mad at him for doing it, but I'm not going to explain it away and let you off the hook. When I have opportunity to be on TV, I'm going to say that was some scumbag stuff if I felt like it was scumbaggy. And so the reason why I'm surprised that you would say that for the front end and not for the back end, is because on the back end, it's like they would say the same thing. It's hard to get these players to come without giving them this pitch, because it's marketing essentially, right? And just like when if you shopping for something and you see a commercial, you see those infomercials on TV, they tell you all this stuff that this thing can do, and it don't do half of it as well as they say it does. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. So they coming in to these kids and they're not adults when they're recruiting them. So I guess you should treat them like adults, but they aren't adults. And someone else is telling them all the stuff that they want to hear. So you feel like you got to tell them all the stuff they want to hear too.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I get, like, I think the broader rhetoric for everybody kind of needs to change, except it's a prisoner's dilemma situation.
Exactly.
But once one person gets thrown into the system and they cheating, then everybody else is going to wind up, you know, going away from what the plan is. But I think that what you say about the sales pitch means something, except if you Notre Dame, it's like, look, man, whether I'm here or not, this is Notre Dame. Like, what you going to get out of going to Notre Dame is only but so much to do with me. I think that applies to LSU. Most of them kids that are going to LSU are going to LSU no matter who the coach happens to be, right? I think there's a whole bunch of these schools where we could say that, but I just think that honesty on the front end, the problem is less the behavior on the back end than the fact that it's sold with dishonesty on the front end. Like that, yeah. That's what my thought is. I don't think the actual move of leaving or how this winds up going and not talking to people and stuff like that, I think that's real easy for us to judge over here. But somebody comes to you and is like, hey, $3 million raise, take it or leave it today. And we sitting here talking about, you have no principles because you did that.
Nah, I can't go that far. Oh, no. Can't go that far.
I'm out. I am out. Like, I have no problems with it. I've no compunction. I'm on the way out. Also, I noticed that you put on a Louisiana accent, so you need to listen back to this, right? Like, a couple minutes ago, when you was talking about LSU, I heard it. I heard it creep out. You need to listen back. You heard it too?
Happen.
Okay.
It did happen.
I heard it too.
I did notice that. With a baby.
Yeah,
with a
baby. Them dudes are so cool, man. But I forgot what I was going to say once you went with the baby. But I do think that I understand all of that. And I am not trying to present myself as, like, more highly principled. In the job that we're in now, like, we can't, like, break our contract and go somewhere else. Somebody would have to buy us out or something. I'd be down with it. But there's nobody here that is, like, relying on us. If there were, maybe I would think twice about it, but for the right number, I'm going to have to hurt some feelings. But I'm not going to be upset. Not that they are. I'm not going to be upset when people judge me. And I do think that it's partially their responsibility. While you saying that they should be more honest on the front end, like, they should understand how flawed this system is and, like, at least put voice to that. When you're up on the podium, rather than say all this nonsense and lies, like, your money going to be there. Say, I had to move. This opportunity was too much for me to walk away from. I hate how this impacted my players. I wish that the system were different. This is big business. It should treat it like big business. Those players should be paid. Like, that, for me, would go a long way for me to feel like they were on the right side of all this. But, yeah, go get your money. I ain't mad at them for that.
Oh, yeah. I go wrong. I ain't saying he on the right side.
Right.
I just think that people are taking the easy interpretation of what is going on here. Even if it's not justifiable, it's like, look at what the game is.
This comes down to, like, me and you, how we had this conversation before about how you are ahead of the curve as far as evaluating black quarterbacks. Like, I think in general, you are more cerebral than emotional. I think I'm more cerebral than emotional than most people, but I'm more emotional than cerebral than you. And
yes,
as soon as there is a reason for me to criticize the system of college athletics, that's what I'm going to do, because it's an emotional reaction to me. And you, on the other hand, you take it all in and then you spit out what you believe to be the right take. I have decided, and I'm going to be honest with you, I've decided that I hate this system. And if you give us an opportunity to talk about it, I'm going to talk about it. I'm not going to defend anybody.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, you see, I think we're in the same boat, though, honestly,
right?
Because what I'm saying is, the problem with this is the system itself.
That's fair.
And it's easier to take somebody who is as obviously unlikable as Brian Kelly, who I don't have anything positive to say about other than he's a very good football coach. Yeah. And so he becomes the easiest for, and look, this is way low on the, in the history of Brian Kelly transgressions.
Oh,
this is way low. You know what I'm saying? Way low. So there we go. But look, that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out at theundefeated.com. Check him out on Get Up. Check him out on First Take. He just be on Undebatable. Check him out everywhere and here every Friday on Foxworth Friday. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain and Dave Presley handing things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.